भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading Canto 10, Chapter 11, Text 45. So we can chant Text 45 together. Talvatsa palako bhutva sarvalokai ka palakau Sapratar asau go vatsam. Charayantau vicheratu. Tan vatsa palakau bhutvam. Sarvalokai ka palakau. Sapratara go vatsam. Charayanto vicheratu. Tau vatsa palakau bhutvam. Sarvalokai ka pulakau. Sapratara go vatsam. Charayanto vicheratau. Tau vatsa palakau bhutvam. Sarvalokai ka pulakau. Sapratara so go vatsam. Charayanto vicheratu. Tau vatsa palakau bhutvam. Sarvalokai ka palakau. Sapratara so go vatsam. Charayanto vicheratu. And the word for word. Tau. Krishna and Balaram. Vatsapula cow. As if taking care of the cows. Bhutva. So becoming Sarvaloka Ekapulakau. Although there are the maintainers of living beings throughout the whole universe, Saprata Asau. Finishing breakfast in the morning. Go vatsam. All the calves. Charayantau. Tending. Vicheratu. Wandered here and there. And the translation by Srila Prabhupada of text 45. After the killing of the demon, Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning, and while continuing to take care of the calves, they wandered here and there. Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who maintains the entire creation, now took charge of the calves as if cowherd boys. Purport. Pratanaya sadunam vinchintaya chaduskritam. Krishna's daily business here in the material world was to kill the duskritis. This did not hamper his daily affairs, for it was routine work. While he tended the calves on the bank of the river Yamuna, two or three incidents took place every day. And although these were serious, killing the demons, one after another appeared to be his daily routine work. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapadaswami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Pashtachya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Srila Vrindavan, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he notes that on this particular day, so this is the day that the Vatsasura demon had got annihilated, part of Krishna's routine work of killing the demons. On this particular day, Krishna and Balaram, who maintain all living entities throughout the universe, Eka Palikao, we see that there, they became the protectors of the calves, so Vatsa Palakal, so the two words, maintainers of the universe and protectors now of the cows or calves. Now, as guardians of the calves, they had removed an imposter calf, that is, a demon who had assumed the form of a calf and who had entered amongst the other calves. So that was earlier on in the 42nd verse. we heard how this particular demon had come onto the scene. So Vatsasura was killed in the pasture grounds. And he was the form of boyhood offenses. That's noted by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In Krishna Samhita. and the calves, on the other hand, were forms, and this is in contrast to this demon who had assumed the form of a calf, and we're looking at the calves themselves. They are understood to have attained these forms of calves by being fixed in feelings of subordination to Krishna. So there's mention that Krishna, and that's in this verse today, he took charge of the calves as if they were cowherd boys. So this is interesting. so the external symptoms of perfection, perfecting one's service to Lord Krishna, of becoming fixed in faith, of having achieved perfection in pure devotion, meaning Krishna's one's life and soul and one's entire being is serving him. So in their particular case, in the case of these entities in the form of calves, they received their forms because they had become perfect in their devotional service to Lord Krishna. and their particular devotion was accompanied with this mood of complete subordination to Krishna. They had complete dependence on Krishna. And this kind of dependence on Krishna, that these entities who are taken on these forms of calves, as a contrasted with the demon Vatsasura, who assumed the form by mystic power. So certainly the form he took on was the exact contrast to the form of the calves, which had been attained through their very strong faith and their mood of complete subordination to Krishna. Here you have the demon completely insubordinate, but who had assumed that form through mystic power. So completely different way of having come to that form. So certainly an imposter. And the particular this mood of dependence on Krishna that the calves were displaying, it's described in the Shikshastika. So, Aslisya vapadara tam punasomam adaranam maran karatova yatatata vavidadhatu lampato matpranam natastusa eva naporaha. So, the translation for this is that let Krishna tightly embrace this maid servant who has fallen at his lotus feet. Let him trample me or break my heart by never being visible to me. He is a debauchee after all and can do whatever he likes, but he is still no one other than the worshipable Lord of my heart. So this is that mood of subordination, of having completely fallen at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and being prepared to have Krishna treat one whichever way he wishes. And the continuation of that translation from the Shikshastika, where Lord Chaitanya is expressing this mood of complete subordination to Krishna: I'm a maid servant of the lotus feet of Krishna. He is the embodiment of transcendental happiness and mellows. If he likes, he can tightly embrace me and make me feel oneness with him, or by not giving me his audience. He may corrode my mind and body, nevertheless, it is he who is the Lord of my life. So, this is this extraordinary mood of subordination that the calves actually were carrying within their hearts, and who had acquired these forms due to that perfect mood of subordination to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Now, Srila Sanatana Goswami, he describes, and this is in Sri Krishna Lila Stava, he describes Krishna as being intent on caring for the calves. So he became the protector of the calves. And Srila Sanatana Goswami says, while intent on caring for the calves, you would amaze your crowd of young friends, and at the end of the day, come back home, gray from the dust the calves raise. So this is the description of Krishna's being intent on caring for the calves. It was accompanied, so they went together, the caring for the calves and Krishna performing some extraordinary activity as part of that routine work of caring for the calves, was the routine work of annihilating or completely eliminating demons that appeared. So, indeed, this is exactly what happened in this particular case. Just before this been intent on caring for the calves, which is noted in this particular verse, it had been preceded by him amazing the boys. This mood of amazement is also described by Srila Sanatan Goswami. And this is how the cowherd boys were expressing it, as per Srila Sanatan Goswami. "Victory to you, destroyer of the calf demon. After you killed the demon, knocking down many kapita trees, you were enlivened by the boys' cheers and worshipped by the demigods with a rain of flowers." So this is from Sri Krishna Lila Stava. So this is the way that the boys were responding. They were cheering. So amazement and cheering, like external expression of their amazement for Krishna's extraordinary activity, described as routine work. That routine work took the form of creating amazement in his the fellow small little cowherd boys. So Srila Prabhupada explains that cowherd boys, from the very beginning of their childhood, are trained to take care of the cows, and their first responsibility is to take care of the calves. So this is the system. So along with the other little cowherd boys, Krishna and Balaram went into the pasturing ground and took charge of the calves, and there they played with their playmates. So they're taking on a responsibility, but it's accompanied with play, because they're extremely young boys. So there was earlier on a description of how this tending of the calves, taking on this responsibility, couldn't be separated from the play that accompanied it. So the play was described earlier on, where while taking charge of the calves, the two brothers, Krishna and Balaram, they played on their flutes, and sometimes they played with the amalaka fruits and the bael fruits. So some rounded fruits that obviously allowed for them to use their limbs in a particular way, kicking those fruits. So this is compared to small children that play with balls. So equivalent, but except it was done with fruits. And sometimes they danced and made tinkling sounds with their ankle bells. And sometimes they made themselves into bulls and cows. So they're imitating the very creatures that they're taking care of. And they would do this by covering themselves with blankets. They played imitating the sounds of cows and bulls, and they played like two bulls fighting. So clearly there's very much an acute awareness of nature, and that's where the learning, one could say, how it takes place. It's through observation of nature, and then it's enacted, the activities of the bulls, or is the usage of objects provided by nature for the play. So very imaginative. And Krishna's ecstasy, it grows day by day. As he's joyfully tending the cows. This is described in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. So the description is that as Krishna wanders about, he covers Vrindavan with the sham blue color of his bodily effulgence. So the whole atmosphere is actually getting a bluish tint. So this is, I guess, viewing from the outside. And it's the description is that his bodily effulgence was such that it shone more brilliantly than a cluster of blue lotus flowers. So from all directions in the heavens, there were demigods watching these wonderful pastimes. And it said that, this is in Ananda Vrindavan Champi, that even the demigods fell unconscious because of the boundless joy they were experiencing from watching this blue-tinted scene of Krishna and the little cowherd boys performing this responsibility of caring for the calves and accompanying it with their extraordinary, charming play. So both the celestials and the residents of Raja, they came to enjoy the fun. And the astonishing pastimes of Krishna and Balaram also filled their parents with delight. So it's natural when one's observing the enjoyment of children that one can actually smile and feel delighted. And indeed, this was the case. And in the case of the demigods, actually, there was an experience of boundless joy. So that devotion is there for Lord Krishna, and it manifested that way, like extreme joy, just observing his activities. So after the killing of the demon, Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning. That's in this verse today. So there's an elaborate description of coming to this point, of how it is that they have their breakfast in the morning. So every day before sunrise, so this is also from Ananda Vrindavan Champu, the kind-hearted Yasoda, that's a description of his mother, who knows all moral laws and can purify everyone in the three worlds, she tenderly woke up Krishna. After cleansing his mouth, she rubbed Krishna with fragrant oil, bathed him, anointed his eyes with kajal, smeared his body with sandalwood pulp, dressed him and decorated him with valuable ornaments. Then she happily fed Krishna many tasty, nourishing foods. So this was the whole procedure that's just described in these few words of today's verse, that they finished their breakfast in the morning, Krishna and Balaram. So it was preceded by this a elaborate care of their bodies. the sandalwood pulp keeping their bodies cool during the heat of the day. So Yasoda, she followed behind Krishna when he went out with the cows. She actually used to hum in her parental love. And she would say to Krishna, "Krishna, I'll go with you to a particular place and then return home." And after a short time, however, Krishna spoke some considerate words to prevent Yasoda from going further. So it was a little difficult for her to separate herself from Krishna. So she would go a little distance with Krishna, but then through his considerate words, he would prevent her from going any further. So there's a description of what Krishna looked like. A splendid flower garland swung on Krishna's chest as he walked with his brother and friends. Every day they took the calves to a place full of succulent grass. So this is after Yasoda has stopped accompanying them. The next section is they moved towards areas where there's succulent grass for the cows. After tasting the fresh green grass, the calves would jump around in jubilation. And Krishna passed his day absorbed in various childhood pastimes with his calves and friends. So this is actually a very touching description of these calves eating the young sweet grass and every day going to this new area of sweet grass. In the present time, you know, one can see how completely unnatural things have become, where there's so much manipulation of nature. So in the present time, in the time that we are living in, the cows and calves are fed often with food stuff that has been adulterated. So there may be grass, but they're also often it's accompanied with some sort of oils from creatures of the sea so that they can fatten up, because the whole idea is that they're going to be consumed. So it's extremely demoniac. And what to say even of the land where forests are removed, and what's often grown is crops that come from the seeds where there's been some genetic modification. So the plant DNA is mixed with animal DNA. So some of those plants are of that nature. And this is supposed to be that, you know, it will give enhanced nutrition, which obviously is not the case. It causes a great deal of illness, such manipulation of nature. So a very sad state of affairs in the current time. One can't imagine, you know, calves dancing in jubilation because they're eating fresh, sweet grass every day. Although in Gita Nagari, one sees this sometimes, the calves and cows coming into a new pasture, and you actually see the hind legs raised because they're dancing. They're very happy to be having fresh grass. So, yeah. Every morning, Yasoda prepared delicious food. So here's the description of the delicious food, and sent it out to the forest. And that food parcel contained, it says, enjoyable items that could be, so it falls into different categories. It can be licked, it can be chewed, it can be drunk and sucked. So all those categories were covered in that little lunch packet. So the preparations were also, it's described as being warm and appealing. So the right temperature as well. So upon receiving this lunch packet, Krishna, Haladar, and cowherd boys sat down in a circle and ate the food while laughing and joking. So a very happy, well cared for by Mother Yasoda. And after eating, they continued tending the cows. So So the ankle bells of Krishna filled the forest with captivating sounds, and the touch of his tender lotus feet stimulated the heart of Mother Earth. So a very jubilant kind of atmosphere all round, both from the observation of the on the part of the demigods who are experiencing this boundless joy, Mother Earth becoming stimulated, her heart getting stimulated because Krishna's lotus feet are touching the earth in the forest. And in the late afternoon, Krishna returned from the pastures with the boys and calves. So there's description in Ananda Vrindavan Champu that Yasoda, this is how it goes, the crest jewel of Vrindavan eagerly awaited to receive her sons. Looking towards the forest and listening attentively, she swelled with anticipation over his return. Engaging the household servants in other duties, Mother Yasoda personally did the service of cleansing Krishna's face and limbs when he came home, again feeding him some nourishing foods. So you can see the service there is attending to Krishna. So both prior to his departure, to taking on his responsibility of caring for the calves, and then upon his return, and very extraordinary, this description of her heart swelling with anticipation for his return. So she would put Krishna to rest, and he was put to rest on a jeweled bedstead. So everything's very beautiful, very perfect. Now there's a little description also of who there's going back to on this particular day, because that's this verse is dealing with a particular day. So I've tried to elaborate a little on the whole mood, atmosphere, the way it plays itself out in its very simple, beautiful way. Krishna's interaction with the calves and also with the demons on this particular day. This particular demon that I contrasted his form with the form of the calves that were there and had taken, that the calves had taken their particular forms because of being so fixed in their mood of subordination to Krishna. This insubordinate calf or form of a calf was actually a demoniac follower of Kamsa. And he's described as being a devout worshipper of Durga. So he was the one who disguised himself as a calf to mix in with Krishna's calves. There's a simile that's used, that just as an open veil concealed by tall grass wants to trap an unsuspecting bull elephant, this demon pretended to be a friend, though actually he was a thief. So very nice simile that's used there. It's like a trap. I haven't seen these particular kind of traps. I mean, the ones one gets exposed to that hunters, or, you know, sees visuals of, is hunters with some sort of wire traps and then the ground that suddenly opens up. But it seems that with trapping an elephant, there's some sort of fabric that's used that then covers them. So the comparison is that the demon, by taking on this form of a calf, he actually appeared to be a friend, just like the cowherd boys are friends of Krishna, but actually he was a thief, because he was actually coming to try and rob Krishna of his life. So because it's in disguise, it's the same way that a trap is disguised. A creature may not see that trap. So Krishna engaged in his daily business to kill the Duskritis. so the demoniac entity, so this was one too, taking on this disguise. And the description is that this did not hamper his daily affairs, for it was routine work. That's what Srila Prabhupada tells us. And, you know, to put everything in perspective, taking into account this whole picture that I've tried to paint, Arjuna similarly describes Krishna's position. So this is interesting because he says, O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. So that's the whole, I think it encapsulates this day that this verse is dealing with. Arjuna confirms that Krishna is the maintainer and the object of worship for the devotee and the destroyer of the undesirable entities. So, but actually his actions are equally good for all. So everything is perfect. It's like his routine work is perfect, even though it involves this killing. It's actually equally good for everybody, including the demoniac entities that are eliminated. That particular verse comes from Bhagavad Gita 11:36. Sana Hishikesha Tava Prakritya Jagat Prahishyati Anurajyate Cha Rakshamsi Bitani Disho Dravanti Sarve Namasyanti Cha Siddhe Sangaha. So everything is rightly done by Krishna. So those are some thoughts on this particular verse and this perfect day of Krishna. So if there's any comments, thoughts, additions, elaborations.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for your class. You made a lot of good points. The one thing that came to mind, this is a side point, but you were kind of mentioning that the cows were very elated to have fresh grass. And in this modern day and age, humans are lucky to find fresh food that's not genetically modified. And I was recently talking to Jitendra yesterday, and one pastime I was reading that I brought up to him is that this is from Adi Leela, chapter 17. I don't remember what the verse was, but it says Lord Chaitanya planted a mango tree and it grew basically immediately. And just by eating one fruit, one mango fruit, one would be completely satisfied. Not only that, the mango didn't have any skin or seeds, just like watermelon. Just like watermelon, when there's too many seeds, you can't really relish it. Of course, mango is a little bit different. The seed is inside. But I was just mentioning, the thing that came to me is that Lord Chaitanya didn't even have to genetically modify the food with no seed. So, and I kind of relate that to our consciousness because naturally when we eat fresh food, we're happy. When we don't, or when we eat some modified food, then we're less happy. So there's GMOs, ghastly. We could be a part of two, because GMO actually means genetically modified organism. But depending on how we associate with this Krishna conscious organizations, then we could either be, bear with me, GMO, ghastly modified organization, or GMO, godly modified organization. So it's up to us how we feed our consciousness, and it depends on our motivation. Why are we reading these books? Why are we feeding our mind? If we're doing it with the improper motivation, then we may get some honor, but you know, while people may glorify us for being able to speak properly or nicely, but as soon as somebody else's honor, that's how you know you weren't feeding yourself with the proper motivation. So that's a side point. My real point is, with this verse, actually Prabhupada's purport, he mentions in the last paragraph that it was Krishna's daily routine to kill the demons. And that's what Krishna came down here for. And there's that verse that says, Lord Krishna, aside from incarnating as Lord Chaitanya, to kill the demoniac mentality of the demons, he also descended in the form of the holy name to kill our demoniac qualities. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar Nam Hoite Hoi Sarva Jagat Nistar. However, my question is related to a verse from the Gita, and one thing that could be very discouraging. This verse appears in chapter 2, verse 70. It says, Apoyamana machala pratishtam samudram apa parvishanti yavat tavat kamayam parvishanti sarve sashanti mamnoti nakamakami. It says, how many, it gives an analogy of the demoniac qualities that enter our minds. It describes the analogy of rivers that enter an ocean. The ocean is our consciousness, and the demoniac qualities are like a river. They're going in 24 hours a day without stoppage. And so we see sometimes we can't do 24-hour devotional service, but Maya can, even while we're sleeping. She's giving us these demoniac. So sometimes when we wake up, it's very discouraging. You know, I can't do 24 hours devotional service and kill these demons, you know. I mean, as soon as I wake up, I'm exhausted from my dreams. All these demoniac qualities, now I have to go out and battle the field, do the same routine work. And so it's clearly, we see, obviously, it's very discouraging for devotees to be enthusiastic about reading the books, because the demoniac qualities are coming in like a river every day. So what do you say to somebody who, for all of us, who at least get discouraged at some point in our life? How do we maintain our determination to do our daily sadhana and not, you know, because I've heard Jitendra said there's some people over the years, I mean, Subal is very humble. He's always said, sometimes I was out for, you know, a year or two, you know, then came back to Krishna consciousness. But Jitendra told me many times, people left for 15 years, 20 years, then came back. So Subal, I mean, I think for most of us, that's not that big of a deal, 1 or 2 years, but I've heard Jitendra many times. So what are some steps we could do to prevent ourselves from leaving for 20 years and then coming back? What are some steps we could do, you know, and stop wasting time?
Well, the organization always remains godly. Because there's the proper structure there that allows one to go through the routine activities of sadhana. So the very building is designed through the activities to allow one to steady oneself. So, you know, the regular performance of aarti to the deities, the opportunity to perform kirtan, there's time where one can chant in the association of devotees. So that very design, if one is struggling, one can take shelter of the structure that's there within the godly institution, because it's a way to allow one to hold on if one feels one's slipping. It takes a good amount of mental strength to even avail oneself of the structure. And this is, I think, what you were pointing to, the mental strength part. Where the mental strength fails, and so one just falls away altogether. And so your question was, you know, what steps could one do to, maintain mental strength? And that was one thought on it, making use of the structure that's there. So if the mental strength is not so much there, even if one makes a little attempt. So much extra strength comes even from the little attempt. So it's one's little effort is, you wouldn't say balanced, it's actually one gets washed, completely washed and cleansed by the little effort one makes to take advantage of something of the structure within the godly institution, so to speak. I'm using your words. The problem with wanting honor, which you mentioned much earlier on in your coming to the question, that is actually supposed to be the most deep-rooted obstruction in devotional service. Like out of everything that's there, like in this case we're hearing of, you know, this entity deceptively taking on a particular form. So there may be deceit. Behind the deceit is the desire for honor. So it's actually interconnected. It's the most deep-rooted of all the obstructions in devotional service. And I guess in that highlights, you know, this glorious position of even the calves of Krishna, that they'd come to be so fixed in their mood of complete subordination. I mean, that's what prevents feeling subordinate to Krishna, that desire for honor. It creates an obstruction. So, those efforts that one makes to at least go through the recommended things of devotional life, those activities of devotional life, it actually allows Krishna to intervene. Krishna goes through that obstructing wall, or that obstructing wall sort of gets pushed aside, it becomes more like a sliding door just because one's making the effort, and then Krishna can enter to actually help with destroying, because he's the one who destroys those big obstructions. But it requires one's availing oneself of the particular devotional activities. That's just a little thought.
Thank you for your answers. You reminded me of a couple of points. You could expand on it if you like, but you reminded me of some good points. Like you said, the last point you mentioned, the Lord is the one who's actually doing the purification, the killing, the capital punishment of our demons. But we should try to secure our demons, just like security guards secure criminals. We should do our best to secure our pride with our guard of humility. And if the Lord is pleased by our effort, then he'll put our demoniac qualities on death row. And you were also mentioning that, by Krishna's mercy, he's doing the actual purification. And that reminds me of the Gundicha temple pastime, where Lord Chaitanya, all the devotees were cleaning the Gundicha temple. And they had a small pile of dust. And Lord Chaitanya had his pile of dust. The pile of dust was like a mountain for Lord Chaitanya. We're only doing a little bit by our effort, and the Lord is, by his Shakti, is doing the actual purification. But at least we have to do our effort. That's why I love that pastime. And one last point, you reminded me of something Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. You said the desire for honor is one of the greatest obstacles, or the greatest obstacle in our devotional practice. And this is actually what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Jaiva Dharma. I'm a writer. I wrote the notes down. I can't reference them right now, unfortunately. And that's why I like to give many references, but I could reference it later. He says that even though a Vaishnava may have rooted out bad qualities like lust, the desire for pratishta doesn't leave so easily and is very detrimental. And we could see this in many pastimes, like the famous one I'll use is Ambarish Maharaj in Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, he was envious of Ambarish because everyone was going to Ambarish as a wise man. He was thinking, I'm celibate. You know, you see this saffron? You know, you see, you know, I'm celibate, I'm clean, I'm pure, and he's married, and they're going to him for wisdom, and not me. I'm a brahmana too. And so he became envious, and the reason this pastime is very funny, because even though he was a brahmana, he was celibate. And however, I think the attempted homicide cancels all that out. On the other hand, Ambarish Maharaj, he was married, but you know, he didn't try to kill anyone. So I think, you know, so one of my favorite quotes from the Bhagavatam that I was sharing with somebody yesterday, and I mentioned in class many times, is from the 5th canto, chapter 1, verse 17. It says that even if a person is a monk who travels from forest to forest, he must always feel, because in other words, this verse says that nobody is actually a monk. Everyone is married. And this verse says from the 5th canto, chapter 1, verse 17, it says, even if a person is a monk who travels from forest to forest, he must always fear material bondage because he is married to 6 co-wives, the mind and 5 senses. On the other hand, if a person is a householder, if he's divorced from Maya, then he's always self-satisfied. So Durvasa Muni was a monk, but he was married to Maya. On the other hand, Ambarish was a householder, but he was divorced from Maya. So the lesson I could, you know, same thing you were mentioning, the lesson we can learn from this is that it may be easy to break up with our girlfriend or divorce our wife, but it's not so easy to divorce Maya, even by accepting the dress of renunciate, or even by getting a restraining order. So what are some steps we could, if I had to ask a question, sometimes I've asked this question many times before, but Prabhupada says in Gita 2.25, things need to be repeated because we have a Kali Yuga memory. So things need to be repeated. So my question is that in our devotional community, or just in general, sometimes, I mean, that's the tendency. All problems come from whatever it is I'm superior to you and you're inferior than me. So this is the obstacle that I'm more pure. But if you're so pure means you're happy. But if you're contaminated by envy, then what is your, if you have purity on the outside but no purity on the inside. So what are some steps we can move forward to, same question, develop, be humble like the great saints by always thinking I'm impure, I'm disgusting, because we see that if we don't think this way, then the Lord will make sure we're impure and disgusting like Sobari Muni. Sobari Muni, because he was a celibate, but because of his offense, he had to marry 50 girls and fulfill all his desires. So maybe you could, you know, sorry, you know, some points to keep in mind, but I'd like to share. So.
Thank you. Yes, I think, you know, you're highlighting the discrepancy in some sense that's there, because internally there's the criminal mind or the demons that are residing internally. So, I mean, it's part of the progress of devotional life that as one moves forward through the different stages, the different demons get annihilated by Krishna. So it's sort of externally presented here as we're going through these pastimes of Krishna. So at the time of getting to a point of nishtha or firm devotion, that's the time when hope awakens, hope and eagerness, because one can actually then see that, oh yes, actually I really am being protected by Krishna. Actually I'm coming to firm ground. I'm not in this very vulnerable position where I'm at the mercy of my mind. So it's a natural progression as one's going through devotion, but it's at the point of nishtha that one's no longer so much at the mercy of the mind. So up until that time, there is that problem that one's having to deal with a mind that has its envious thoughts, wants its honor. And you indicated your understanding of what's needed to deal with the mind, because you indicated that one has to contain the mind, and the way of containing is monitoring. One has to monitor those thoughts. So the particular thoughts that come, one can't give free rein to them. I mean, never mind the thing of acting on it, but even the fact that they're going around and around in one's mind, one needs to actually speak to the mind. And Srila Raghunath Das Goswami does that. I mean, there's a whole book devoted where he actually breaks down whether it's deceit, hypocrisy, enviousness, all of it is broken down, and he actually addresses the mind. So, he uses terminology that, indicates that the mind is despicable. much like you painted the picture too, one recognizes its, criminal mind, how it's thinking. So, one has to monitor that thinking. And not give the mind free rein. One has to keep it on a tight leash. So you see the thoughts are going, and you know how the mind functions. One thought goes into the next, into the next, into the next, into the next, and before you know it, you're in a whirlpool. You just can't get out of it. You're getting sucked down. And then before you know it, all the emotions that come with those thoughts are also overriding one's whole being. So in psychological theory, they have, particularly with behavioral theory, there's this idea that one thing sets off a chain. So if you can catch that first thought, so that first envious thought or that first thought that's wanting honor, one then speaks to the mind and said, "Dear mind, you may be so desperate for some recognition from the outside world, so desperate to have, be patted on the back, so desperate to be praised. But truly, why do you need that praise? Be satisfied with the fact that this devotional activity is being performed. I acknowledge that I've gone through a great deal of effort to come to this class this morning. I've walked 3 miles, 2 miles to come to this class this morning, and I've gathered my thoughts and I've presented 2 questions. I'm very satisfied with the effort I've made. Dear mind, kindly keep quiet. You may want a pat on your back, but I acknowledge the effort I've made." So, you provide to yourself fill the gap that's there, because the mind is needing emotional support a lot of the time. That's really what it is. So one gives that to oneself, one speaks. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he bashes the mind, and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recommends that. So you can beat it, but you can also be kind in terms of, on an intellectual level, responding, understanding what's the reality. Because the mind is somewhere in the past, it's not in the present. And things from the past are getting mixed with the present. The mind is messy. So you just look at what the present is. What is the present reality? And you acknowledge the present reality. And whatever the mind's doing, I was once advised, spit at it. So you can even spit at your mind, because it's not you. It's like a whole chain of learned responses from interactions with persons one grew up with, how they dealt with one, and it's all recorded in the mind. So the mind is looking for something that wasn't satisfied in one's childhood in previous times. So one then gives that's needed. So one says, just acknowledges the present. I did this. Well done, well done. Just like the cowherd boy say to Krishna, well done, well done. I did this. I'm very pleased. Excellent. And then, you know, there's a sense of, yes, this is the reality. So you just keep acknowledging the current reality.
Five second quote. You reminded me of one devotee said, if we don't preach to the mind, then our mind will preach to us.
Thank you, Jabaladeva. Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. I hope we all have as perfect a day in Krishna consciousness as was this perfect day of Krishna's pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.